At the crossroads of culinary history, Jewish food and Southern soul food aren't usually thought of as intersecting. But Michael Twitty, a culinary historian and cook, brings them together, the history and flavors of his own roots, what he calls kosher soul. He grew up outside Washington, D.C., and after a lifelong interest in Jewish culture, he converted to Judaism in his early 20s. He writes about Southern food and his Black and Jewish heritage on his blog, Afro-Culinaria, and he's working on a book called The Cooking Gene. Michael Twitty joins us from Washington. Michael, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Well, I want to first ask you what kosher soul means to you.
It's sort of a moniker to express a sense of cross-cultural spirit. Blacks and Jews are peoples. They are not races. They are not nationalities. And at the core of both of those identities is this sort of ethereal, cultural, and metaphysical, spiritual things, essence, that, you know, gives us this urge and will to survive across generations. And so for me, kosher soul is a way of not only expressing that, but sort of like the elements of food as well. You know, people think of Jewish food, think of kosher. They think of Black food, think of soul food.
Right.
And so that's the, you know, it's a double entendre on both the edible and aesthetic parts of my identity.
Well, how do you bring the two together in food?
Pretty easy. I mean, you just have to, you start with making soul food kosher. You know, you take out those elements, the pork, the meat and milk mixed together in the meal or in a dish. But it's more than that. It's actually a process of looking at what foods and what traditions the two diasporas have in common and really sort of mixing and melding the two and playing with the two. It's really quite liberating. There's a lot of people who assume that because soul food is so synonymous with pork that it's and you can't make it without it. And that's actually not true. Our ancestors in West Africa did not rely on the domesticated hog for most of their protein. You know, I sometimes do Afro-Brazilian and Sephardic Jewish from Portugal mixed together in the same dish. Or I play along with those ideas, cross continents, cross, you know, language barriers. And it's, so it's sort of a fun thing to do. It's very liberating because then I have these rules, but I go outside of those rules and just have a good time with it.
Well, okay, so give me an example of a soul food dish, something really challenging to make kosher, that you were able to take something that we would traditionally eat in a soul food restaurant, let's say, and mix these two cultural traditions together.
Well, I mean, isn't it obvious? Fried chicken.
Okay.
Fried chicken, you can't make it without buttermilk.
Right.
So what do? You use soy milk and you use lemon juice.
Hmm.
You know, of all those adaptations can be made. The easiest one that people don't even think of is smoked turkey. And in most kosher markets, in the East Coast at least, you can find kosher smoked turkey wings anywhere. And so that's just as good as ham hock or anything like that. So those adaptations are easy.
And what about this category that you mentioned a minute ago of food traditions that both of these cultures have in common?
So there's this whole idea of the one-pot meal. In Jewish tradition, that's reserved for chamin or chulent, the stew that you make for Shabbat, for Shabbos. And most of the food ways of West Africa can be expressed in they boil it, they fry it, or they grill it. The boiling often means there's this one-pot stew. So you think of chicken and groundnut stew. You think of chebuljin from Senegal, which is, you know, fish or shellfish with rice. This kind of one-pot meals are very traditional. And so it's easy to say, for example, make for a holiday or a Shabbat something like a gumbo, you know, matzo ball gumbo of Mrs. Covert from New Orleans. That's her famous dish. I love to cook. But it's also referential to making a Senegalese chicken soup with knedlach, you know, with matzo balls. So you have the peanut stew, the chicken, straight from Senegal, and you have the Eastern European matzo meal balls, that dumplings that are in the stew. So there's this whole idea that, you know, we gather people around that pot, and in the process of them eating, they get to know who I am. I'm not a dragon. I'm not a phoenix. I'm not a mythical creature. I'm an African American who happens to be Jewish. And if people eat my food, they understand where I'm coming from.
Michael Twitty, you were not raised Jewish. What made you first discover and fall in love with Jewish culture and Jewish cuisine?
I think it's important to mention I wasn't raised Jewish, but like many African Americans, I have Jewish ancestry. That's one thing that really hasn't come up a lot. I'm always the convert, but I have to be real with you. You know, I have that's part of my DNA. It's part of my blood.
How far back?
I would say from the oral history of my family, sometime in the 1800s or beyond. Mm. Most Jewish families can't go back beyond the 1800s when they trace their family history back. But as an African-American, I can go back way further than that. So it's these blended lines, and a lot of African-Americans have those traditions. But to your question, I think I was able to sort of understand myself a little bit better through Yiddishkeit. And then I was always steeped in African-American culture, history, tradition, and I was raised with a love of it. And then what happened was when I began to learn more about Jewish culture around the world, Jewish civilization, I acquired a certain language, a certain vocabulary to reapproach African-American culture and history. And part of that was food. Jewish food was studied academically, like seriously, like as an element of text,
right,
as an extension of this great tradition, while African-American food was this, you know, come on down home, it's comfortable. And I said, no, there's something more to this. There's something very serious and something very special and sacred about African-American food. And so what essentially happened was I began to use the same set of tools by which I understood Jewish food in all of its permutations and applied those to African-American food.
Well, it's one thing to fall in love with a culture. It's another, and even to feel that it is part of you as a result of your ancestry. It's another to convert to Judaism, which you did in your mid-20s.
Mm-hmm. So to me, it wasn't the hardest thing in the world. I feel like I just kind of shifted houses. My rabbi, you know, saw me dutifully come to synagogue, and I learned by making mistakes. I learned by, you know, doing this or doing that or doing that wrong and reading books. And so that was my class. You know, a lot of people who convert Judaism in America, they go to classes. They have a certain set rhythm. And for me, it was fairly informal. But then again, I was there every week learning the holidays, learning, you know, every Shabbat. And I mean, I really integrated myself into the Sephardic community where I converted. And I have to say this too, you know, I think a lot of people think, you can put on the mantle of being Jewish, but are you really Jewish? And to that, I have to say, well, you know, Abraham wasn't born Jewish. He wasn't raised Jewish. Neither was Moses. Moses wasn't raised Jewish. My namesake, Akiba, the greatest rabbi in the Talmud, wasn't born Jewish and couldn't read and write till he was 40. So being Jewish is something that you are because you become it. You choose to be it. You choose to embrace it.
Although the official rules, aren't they, are that if your mother is Jewish, then you are.
Yes, that's one way of looking at it. And I think we also have to pay respect to, even though I'm not Reform, pay respect to the Reform movement that allows for patrilineal lineage. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have the largest Jewish movement in America, you know, somebody has to play by your rules at some point, don't they?
As you were learning more and more about Judaism, did you see parallels between the oppression of Jews and the oppression of blacks?
Absolutely. There's a beautiful painting that illustrates that. It's from the late Middle Ages, and it shows the ghetto, the Jewish ghetto in Lisbon, which was right next to where the black folks were allowed to live who were West African slaves. And the two communities are right side by side interacting in this painting. It's fascinating because one group is marked by its skin color. The other group is marked by the small yellow circle, which becomes during World War II, what? The yellow star. And so this, you can't be here. You can't use the same facilities. You can't marry us. All of that's very important to both histories. But I think even more important than that is how both groups survived their oppression. Humor is important. Satire. Especially in that humor. And that comes out through the food as well. And it comes out through images. And there's so many parallels between the aesthetic nature of black folks and Jews around the world. And when it comes to food, we're the only two peoples I've ever seen that go, we eat this because, you know what I'm saying? Mm. We eat this because this happened to us in history. We eat this because this was the circumstances of our ancestors. Other people hint around that, but blacks and Jews literally say it. And that is something very unique and very particular to both diasporas.
Michael Twitty, who writes on the blog Afroculinaria. He is also working on a book called The Cooking Gene. Michael, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.